Downloading. 98%. 99%. Download complete. The episode will begin in
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Tech Talk, the technology show for blind and partially sighted people. Your hosts this week are...
I'm Stephen Scott.
I'm Sean Preece.
And I'm Tim Schwartz.
Hey! Oh, it's good to be here. Mind you, at our age, it's good to be anywhere. Hello, I am Stephen Scott. That is Sean Preece. How are you, Sean?
I am in my prime, Stephen. How dare you? I'm, you know, life begins at 45, I think. I hope.
Good luck with that one. Tim Schwartz is also with us. How are you, Tim?
I'm good, Stephen and Sean. You wish life began at 45.
You're catching me up, Tim.
I'm not far behind, unfortunately.
I don't think any of us are far behind. That's the worry. Okay, so we have got so much to get through in terms of emails this week because we get so many emails in and we very rarely get a chance to sit down and go through them in any great detail. We kind of tend to always end up have them at the end of the show and then we have to stop. So, right, look, fade away the music. Fade that music away because I think we should just get right into the email inbox today. And that means it's time for a jingle.
Email. We get email. Get your email every day. Here's your mail today.
Right, time to open the mailbox then, because there are so many emails and I wanted just to get right into them this week. And we'll kick things off with Narina, who I think this email will bring about a bit of a conversation. So I'm glad we're doing this. And this is just a quick inquiry that Narina has. She says, have you heard of a new mobile phone very much like the Alto 2 that the R&IB used to sell? She says, I know that you are an Apple boy. I think she's talking to me. to you, this phone would be a bit basic perhaps, but it sounds like a useful phone as it just texts, makes a call, has a radio, that kind of thing, and is made specially for blind and disabled people. The website for this is luciaphone.com. That's L-U-C-I-A phone.com. Narina says the company is based in Switzerland, and she's trying to find out if R&IB are planning to stock it. Have you heard about it? Well, short answer is no, I've never heard of this phone before, but we have been looking it up. Well, I have anyway, because I'm the one that does all the work around here. These two just show up. Yeah, are you all right, Tim?
Yeah, I'm okay. So, go on.
Are you just choking on my nonsense?
a little.
So, yeah, I did look into this actually because this interests me a little bit. Now, this might shock you guys.
No, it doesn't shock me at all. That's why you looked into it. Otherwise, you wouldn't have done. Thank you.
Wouldn't care less, yeah. I did look into it because I am a bit interested in this. This is a phone which is essentially the kind of thing I'm looking for. I've been looking for a phone to get away from my iPhone at work. Because I've got an iPhone. Yeah, I know, but hang on, let me explain.
Wow.
So I've got an iPhone at work and I've got an iPhone at home. I mean, you know, I carry it about with me. It is a mobile phone. I don't just leave it at home. But, you know, it's my own iPhone. It's a 7 Plus. I like it, sort of. But it's, you know, it's a good phone. And I've got an iPhone SE for work. And I'm thinking, well, do you know what? The problem is I've got two iPhones. One's got email. Well, they both have email on it. They both have social media on it. And you're kind of bumping between these two phones. And I'm thinking, well, hang on. Wouldn't I just be better off having a phone for work that is just for calls and texts? You know, it's just for that purpose. And have everything on the one iPhone. And at least then when you're on holiday, you can switch off your email, you can switch off all that stuff, and it doesn't have to bother you. But equally, you're not going to get bothered by calls from work because you're using the same SIM card for everything. So that's my thought behind all of this.
Now, what you're expecting me to say is that I totally disagree with you, Stephen. Mm-hmm. I know that's what you're waiting for.
I am.
But no, actually, in your case, in this specific case where you've got two phones and the work phone, you do not need the smart features. What about email, though? Would you not need email as well for the work phone?
Yeah, but I can do that on the iPhone.
Then why have two phones at all? Why not just have
one? Still be switching back and forth.
No, but what I would do is have one phone which is like, you know, just for calls and texts for work. So that's all that phone does, and that's got my work SIM in it. And then I've got my own phone, which has got my own SIM in it, but, you know, has all the stuff that's on the other phone, like the email and the social media and the, all the work-related stuff that I have, can all just live on the one phone. So all the smart stuff lives there, and all I do is use the other phone for calls and texts, which I rarely use anyway because nobody ever calls anymore.
Are you talking about taking the SIM card, just having one SIM card between the two phones?
No.
Okay, then that's fine then. Okay,
are not understanding what I'm saying.
No, I am totally not understanding what you're saying. Anyway, forget that.
No, I'll have my work SIM in my dumb phone, the other phone, yes. And I'll have my own SIM in the iPhone. That's the idea.
Right. Okay, so how are you going to check your work? You're going to have to carry two phones around with you anyway. Is that the
point? I'm always going to have to carry two phones, yeah, but it's what the phones are. Do I want to have two iPhones? So it means I'm checking two iPhones, I'm getting messages in two iPhones. I mean, like, I got a calendar appointment that pops up. It pops up in every device I own. And it just gets a bit much after a while. So I'm thinking to keep things simple, I just have this phone, which I only need to pull out for calls and texts. Generally, it'll just stay out the way. It can be smaller, it can be more portable, and then I can just have my iPhone for all my emails, which is generally where I communicate most, through email, through Skype, all that kind of thing. So that's the idea.
I think that's fine. Yeah. And the battery life on these dumb phones, yes, you have my approval.
Thank you for that.
I permit it.
I'm so glad that you approved my decision. But the issue has been trying to find that dumb phone. Because, and I think this is kind of, and this isn't necessarily Narina's situation, but I think we all kind of can help each other out with this one, because what Narina's looking for is a phone that just does calls and texts, and, you know, maybe the odd occasional thing like listening to the radio, but it's finding one that's accessible. Now, there are many, and they do exist. I mean, you can go to the RNIB shop, and that's the first place I went, and the best I can find is the Doro 6520. And that's a clamshell phone. I do like clamshells, I must say. I know they're very American. Tim, you'd love a clamshell.
I hate a clamshell.
Come on, Tim. You're just wrong on this. Why? Get off the show. Why?
No, I haven't used one in so long. I honestly actually don't know if I would like one again or not. I would have to try one again, but it's because it's been so long.
No, you're so cool. There's nothing like flipping it open and hanging up by clicking it shut. It just makes you look like the Fonz. I looked amazing when I had a clamshell phone.
I don't think that the Fonz had a clamshell in Happy Days. I could be wrong. I've been wrong before.
Yeah, you could be wrong, but I don't think there was cell phones on Happy Days.
Moving on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of cultural reference fail there. But anyway, so the 6520 from Doro, that is the one that is on sale from RNIB. And the reason that that's on sale is because it does have incredibly large text on the screen. So it's brilliant if you can see the screen. Now, I probably could see the screen with this, as long as its background is a certain colour, it doesn't have pictures on it.
I'm sure it would be as well. I'm sure it would be high contrast.
High contrast, yeah. So it would need to be like that for it to work. The buttons aren't too bad, fairly tactile. I mean, it's a nice little phone. It's not massively expensive. RNIB is selling it for XVAT. I think it's around just under £100. You can get it on Amazon cheaper. And you can get it, you know, in various colours as well. So there are options there with that one. There are other Doro phones as well, easy to see versions and all that kind of thing. Some of them are quite simple. I mean, one that the RNIB sell at the moment, which I think is really quite clever, is it's a phone which doesn't actually have numbers in it. It has pre-programmed ABCD buttons, and those are pre-programmed. That's actually quite good for certain members of the family just to have, and there's also like an SOS button on there, so if something goes wrong you can just hit that button and it will contact everyone it needs to, for maybe an elderly relative or somebody you just maybe want to be able to quickly get in contact with you. Like my gran would have loved this when she was here, you know, she would have probably used that kind of thing because it's really, really simple.
Yeah. Well, that's what people want, isn't it? I mean, enough people have emailed us and told us that they're looking for a simple, easy-to-use phone.
Yeah.
You know, and I know I have been a little, well, quite a lot against them. But I just think that the way the technology is going, smartphones are the future. And the amount of stuff that it enables you to do is amazing. For that reason alone, I think everyone should be aware of them and have a go at them. But, of course, there is that case where, you know, you just want to make phone calls and texts, which I'll be honest, the iPhone isn't great at making phone calls. The amount of time I play ear tennis with it, you know, when it goes to speakerphone, you take it away, then it goes back and then you put it back. It drives me crazy. Making phone calls is the worst thing on a smartphone.
Where do you stand on this, Tim?
I actually agree with everything Sean just said because I think that...
Hang on. You didn't really just agree with everything Sean just said.
I'm saving that. Did agree with everything Sean just said. Yes. So, yeah, it's the one time. Hold on to this moment forever, Sean.
We don't have a jingle for breaking news. I didn't. I've never made one.
I would say that he's right that the future is smartphones. That being said, though, as he talked about, we've had so many people say to us, yeah, but I want a dumb phone. I just want to make calls and send text messages, maybe email if it has it, and that's it. And they want that basic functionality. I don't know if it's because the smartphone is a little daunting to them, if maybe the flat glass screen is still a little daunting to some blind people. Maybe they're just still nervous to try that out. I don't know. Or maybe they just don't feel they need all the other functionality of a smartphone, which, like Sean said, there's so many things you can do with a smartphone. I really can't imagine how I handled my old Nokia phone. I can't see how, you know, Nokia and Tox was even viable for me back in the day, considering everything that I can do with my iPhone. But again, there are those people that want that basic functionality. And you know what? As much as I feel like Sean, that people need to at least be aware of smartphones and try to learn them if they can, I'm not going to begrudge them the need for wanting something simple.
Yeah, I think it's finding the solution that works. And what it appears, anyway, is that there aren't many options out there for people who want speech in these dumb phones. That's the problem. And that's where Narina's email really, really interests me, because she's mentioned this Lucia phone, L-U-C-I-A phone, which, if you add .com to that, that's the web address. And what this does is essentially it sells itself. I mean, this is not out yet, and that always makes me a wee bit worried. But this is coming soon, as it says on the website. And it has advanced features such as accessible buttons in different colours and shapes, as well as voice guide, which transforms the phone into a talking companion. But it is a simple phone. It is designed, I would say it looks, I mean, I'm only seeing, there may be other images here, but the only one I can find an image of it makes it look to me like an old Nokia type phone. It's quite sort of large at the top, and then it has a sort of a thinner body with the actual numbers on it. The buttons seem well spaced, which is good, and you know, from all I can tell from the images, that the buttons do look fairly fairly tactile, which is good as well. But yeah, it does have large screen but voice guidance, so that does look like a good option. Coming out from a company in Switzerland, will R&IB stock it in Arena? I don't know. It's a short answer.
They should do, by the sounds of it.
If it's going to work and, you know, people want it, then I should imagine R&IB will, or at least should be made aware of it, and we will certainly do our bit here to make R&IB aware of it. So, I think this is quite good, guys. I think things like this is the kind of, you know, I know we talk about this as if, well, you know, who wants to do it? And I know what you're saying, Sean, but I do worry that there are people out there who listen to the show saying, yeah, I don't want all these fancy features.
They don't know they want them. That's the trouble. That's what I'm saying. I'm with Apple. You don't know you want this. No, you're absolutely right. And there is a place for these phones. And we got to be careful that they don't die out and we can't get hold of them when someone does need one.
Just a quick point on this. Narina, of course, emailed in with this, but Martin also got in touch with an email and he says, hello, Stephen, Sean and Tim. Hope you're all well. Love the show. Regards to Kieran's question, and this was another question from one of our listeners last week or recently, about a phone for his wife. If you remember, Kieran got in touch. His wife is visually impaired and he was looking for a phone that would work. And we mentioned the Capsys phone, which is a smartphone, but it has buttons. He says, this is the response to that from Martin, who says, it would be great for her. He says, I have one. It is very easy to use. He says, I know Sean said that touchscreens are here to stay, but they're not for everyone. See?
He's right. No, that's okay. Sorry.
Well, this is the bit that interested me from Martin's email. He says, you can still get the Nokia phones with Tox from Vitech Solutions. I didn't know that.
See, Okay, Tim.
You put that one on. Right.
So, yeah, I am quite surprised by that you can still get a Nokia phone with Tox. I personally am happy to not have my Nokia phone anymore with Tox. I'm glad that it's stuck in a drawer somewhere and I'll never see it again. But to the point here that Martin's making, if that's what somebody wants, is that basic of functionality and that simple of an interface and everything, I mean, the Nokia phones with Tox worked fine. They were accessible. Now, the problem is, are they still being updated? Is there still support for that? I'm not sure. We'd have to look into that. But I mean, it was a simple, easy solution.
It's a fairly walled garden, though, wasn't it? I mean, I'm thinking It probably isn't updated that much. But from
Symbian, the operating system that the Nokia phones used to run on, that's gone. That's dead in the water. I'm not sure about the Talk software itself, but I would assume the production on that stopped as well. So, look, as we keep coming back to, it depends. If it works for someone, then it's worth it, and if it works for you, then go for it. But I gotta say, I do struggle with this sort of trying to learn to use Talk and the T9 keyboard and texting using the old A, B, C, D, E, F thing. I just think, you know what, put that time into something else, and I think you would get much more out of it. I know people are going to say, as Martin rightfully said there, and you know, touchscreens aren't for everyone, and absolutely right, but I don't know. I think you're just making a rod for your own back with this older stuff.
Well, the only thing I would say about that is I get what you're saying, but I think that you said about putting time in. I think most people who are talking about using these phones probably know that layout better than they would ever know a smartphone layout. I mean, in terms of the keypad, in terms of the layout of all of that, the 1 to 9 numbers, the T9 as they call it, that layout, I think that's probably more common and more used than the previous. I mean, certainly that's how I started out. I mean, I used to use phones when it was the good old days. I'm sure we all did. You know, it was that keyboard. The idea of using an actual QWERTY keyboard on a phone was insane. So I think it's about what works for you. Does Nokia with Talk make sense in 2018? I'm not sure, because it is something which you're essentially buying something that's dead. And, you know, I'm kind of minded of the Monty Python dead parrot sketch. with mobile
phones.
This Nokia is deceased.
It is
mining for the fjords.
But I don't know. You know, maybe I don't think they're moving on with that one. I think it might be just a case of maintaining it. But it's what works for you. I think the problem is that the reason I think this is actually more indicative of the problem rather than the solution, in that we're not seeing any new products out there that are filling the gap of, I mean, if you're having to buy Nokia with Talk in 2018, that's because there's nothing else out there doing the job, and that's maybe where this Lucia phone thing comes in.
Well, you could argue, yeah. I mean, you got that one, and then I think the next step up is probably, you know, a synaptic phone. That seems to me to be the next obvious level.
That's a really good point, actually, because that is what I would call, and I know I've been criticised for this before, but it is a stepping stone, arguably, to the Android platform. Because you buy the synaptic phone with the software, which is very easy, and once you've learned one layout, you've kind of got it all. Then you could learn the Android software, and you don't have to buy a new phone because it's in the phone you've got. So if you wanted to move on to that, you could, but if you're quite happy using the synaptic software, then fine. I think it's an interesting one, but we will certainly keep an eye on this one for you, Nirina. And she also just added on the email, she says, keep up the good work. You all cheer me up on a Tuesday. Well, that's our job.
Oh, thank you.
Right, let's move on because there's quite a lot to talk about. Hopefully that's useful. Just a quick point, though. The RNIB shop, great place to go. 0303-123-9999 is the number to get through to RNIB's helpline. They'll put you through to the shop. The phone I mentioned there, the Doro 6520, doesn't have speech, but it is a large print clamshell phone. And the synaptic phone, if you're thinking about prices, a 5-inch synaptic mobile phone, £546.
What?
Now, hang on, that's... What? Well, hang on, you know, you'd pay that for a smartphone. And of course, blind people don't pay VAT on that, so you're talking 455. So that gives you an indication of price. But that's there are other options available. Get in touch with the guys at the shop. They will talk you through all of that. Let's move on to an email from John. He says, "Hi, Stephen, Sean and Tim. Love the show. Great for listening to in bed on a lazy Sunday morning." Well, hello to you on a lazy Sunday morning.
Don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know either.
Roll over, it's a little, little crowded in here.
Yeah.
You're hugging
Tim,
the pillow.
Could you move your feet, please?
Yes.
John says, "You asked on the show for an example of GPS systems that provide both turn-by-turn directions and waypoints to avoid having to swap apps. Well, I know you don't like specialist equipment," and he puts a smile in here,
Stephen.
But I have recently bought the Victor Trek and found that it does this very well, providing both turn-by-turn directions and the ability to mark landmarks, for example, station entrances. It even gives you distance and compass directions to a landmark when you're in an open area. I use it to navigate between landmarks in my local park when free-running my guide dog." There you go, Sean. Yep. Specialist equipment back in the frame again.
I know, and it's, again, perfect use case, because it is so simple to drop waypoints on there. You just press a button, as far as I know, on that, and you got the turn-by-turn GPS. So, yeah, it's a perfect solution. I can't argue that one.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody who's wanting a third-party solution, if you're not interested in using an app on your phone like Blind Square or something like that, and you want that third-party hardware solution, the Victor Reader Trek is really good for that. All the features of the former Trekker Breeze incorporated with the Victor Reader Stream. It's a nice little device, quite honestly, and it is simple to use. It is pretty easy, and you know, for its price point, that's where it gets me for the price for Victor Reader Trek. Last time I checked, I think they're upward of 700 plus pounds, I believe. I think I might be wrong on that, but I believe it's at least 700 or more pounds. And for that price point,
I'm so cheap.
I'll stick with my smartphone and paying whatever it is for Blind Square or something like that. But there are, again, it goes back to the simple aspect of this, where people want something that's simpler and maybe third party. They want a separate device so they don't have to use their phone. They just want a dedicated device. And there are people that want that experience.
Are you all right there, Sean?
I'm feeling a little bit dizzy, I must admit. Look, I just wanted to say as well, I'm slightly disappointed. Did we not get anything about Android apps that do the same sort of thing, as in drop waypoints, breadcrumbs? I thought there would be a few out there.
No, we haven't. We haven't had any emails from anyone regarding that.
Come on, Android people, help us out.
We've been criticised in the past for this. You know, we should do more on that, but you know, the issue is that we don't use Android, so we need you to help us on that one.
Yeah.
I'm slightly distracted because I'm trying to find the price here for the Victor Reader Trek. Now that is it's like dual purpose. You get both the reading functions that you get with the Victor Reader Stream, and what used to be the Trekker Breeze kind of merged into one. Now, price-wise, I just wanted to clarify that, because I thought you might be pricing it a little bit high there, Tim.
Tim.
Well, I'm just checking. Sorry. No, I'm just checking, because I want to make sure we get it right. £545, excluding VAT, is how much the Victor Reader Trek
comes in. That's much better.
Well, that's two
excluding VAT.
Well, that's what blind people would pay. They wouldn't pay the VAT.
Yeah.
So you would get it with the VAT off that. But also, they do the the Victor Reader Stream is $295. But that's not the... I don't think they do the Trekker Breeze anymore, actually.
No, they have discontinued the Trekker Breeze.
Yeah, so that's gone. But it's $545, so a little bit less. But whether it's for your budget or not, you know, that's for you to decide. But, you know, that is a good option. I think it is a good option, because I must admit, I am getting more and more frustrated with my smartphone as my sight gets worse. And I'm a geeky person and I have an interest in this. But there is the, and I've talked about this before, the real world example of all this technology. We did a feature, if you remember this, Sean, you and I did a thing way, way back when Jackie Brown was on the show. And we all went out and about and did various things. We tried, I think Jackie went into the garden and you went off into a field and got lost.
Yes, my usual thing.
You were not intending to get lost, but you did. And
story
I
is life.
Yeah, exactly. And I ended up in a bus station trying to find information about a bus that was coming up, and in the end actually missed three of them trying to find the information about the bus. And the point that kind of came out of that was these apps are all wonderful and great because if you've got the time, but if you're trying to get information quickly, it's not quite as simple. Whereas these devices, and okay, this doesn't read bus timetables, but you know, if you are trying to find information out about your local area quickly, that is what this is designed for, and it's designed in a very tactile way. The other thing is, your phone battery might last maybe more than half a day.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, the real world usage, I mean, the amount of times where I've been desperately trying to find, well, usually somewhere to eat, and GPS just, you know, it just totally falls down, and I'm using Blind Square or Around Me to try and find something close. And in real world use, it's just, yeah, I can't get there. It is, I know exactly what you mean.
There is the other problem with this, and I don't know if the Victor Reader Trek does this, but you have the problem where, and I mentioned this before on the show, it was a couple of years ago, I was in Edinburgh, and I wanted to find a coffee shop. Now, I asked my iPhone, find local Starbucks. So it told me that that it was nearby, within, say, 0.3 of a mile, which I was like, is there a bus service? Clearly not. So I had to walk it. And I followed the directions. Fantastic. Took me to the door. It said, arrived. Couldn't find a door. Couldn't find an entry point. Couldn't find it at all. Took me 10 minutes. And eventually someone who wasn't a tourist walked past and said, oh, it's over there. It's across the road. So I was at it. I was actually there at the point, but at the wrong side of the street.
Yeah, no, I've had exactly the same experience. That's right. You're never quite sure.
And the Victor Reader Trek might get you closer to the door, but it's not going to get you right to the door. It's not going to probably be much better than that experience. That all goes back to that last 10-yard kind of argument of how do we, or not argument, but debate of how do we find that last bit that we need to find? Because GPS isn't always going to get you right to the door. Unless you've been there before and can drop the waypoint the first time, and that way the second time you go back that you can find that waypoint. Otherwise, yeah, finding it the first time sometimes can be very challenging, no matter what GPS you're using.
Right, okay, let's move away from that. HumanWare is where you'll get the Victor Reader Trek from, the UK website. You'll find online just by searching for HumanWare, £545 for the Victor Reader Trek. Yeah, calm down, Sean. Right, email from Gordon, who has been in touch. He says, hi gang, am I the only person who finds the Jaws Eloquence voice harsh and irritating?
Correct.
Yes.
I can't stand it, says Gordon, and I have a much more natural sounding voice reading my screen for me.
Absolutely agree, Gordon. You're 100% right. But let me say this. I feel exactly the same. I've got a lovely voice as my screen reader, but I find that people love Eloquence just because it's so responsive, and when they're flicking through or tabbing through trying to get somewhere quick, they can understand everything it says. It doesn't lose bits of speech or clip. So it's not so much how it sounds, I think, that people love. It's the fact that it's just so responsive.
Yeah, that's true. There are good and bad things about Eloquence. The sound of the voice itself, it is a bit harsh, and it isn't the best sounding voice to listen to, but yeah, I can listen to Eloquence at a much, much faster rate than I can any of those sweet, nice-sounding voices, and it still responds very quickly. I can understand it, and I can move through things much, much faster. Whenever I use any of those nicer-sounding voices, I have to slow them down a little bit because they aren't as responsive at a higher speed. So that is the benefit of something like Eloquence. You just have to, unfortunately, you know, cope with the idea that it's, you know, a more harsh-sounding voice, but it is a lot more productive in certain circumstances, I think.
Yeah.
I agree with all of that, but I would say that I had to move away from the Eloquence voice. I just found it really annoying. I'm with you, Gordon. I found it irritating and actually quite off-putting when I was working because it was so monotone that I just felt I was falling asleep listening to long emails. I mean, you guys know, we get fantastic emails here in the program, and I'm listening through them and I'm, you know, halfway through them. And it's not because of the email. It's because it's being read to me in this monotone voice. And instead, and at that point, I'm using Jaws. You're using NVDA. Sean, I know, Tim, you at home, you use NVDA.
Yep.
But you've used Jaws before. And I was desperate to find a different voice. And I emailed, in fact, actually, I sent a private message to Twitter, on Twitter, to Jonathan Mosen. And I said, Jonathan, how do I fix this? Because I want voices, but I don't want to pay for them. And you know me, I'm cheap.
Of course and not.
Jonathan very kindly said, well, fortunately, there's this website you can go to. And actually, there is a way through JAWS. You can go through in the help menu and go to more voices and get and download more voices and get lots of different options. I chose, I can't remember if it was Samantha or Kate, one of the two, but it's the same one I've used on my iPhone, actually.
Sexist.
well, you know, I have to say, the voice is just so much more enjoyable to listen to.
Yeah.
And it is fairly responsive, not as responsive as Eloquence, for sure, but it's responsive enough. And I think part of that, you know, the couple of things I've learned, especially with the Mac as well, using a Bluetooth keyboard, that's, you know, I remember people talking about the lag, and I used to say, I don't get this lag thing. I don't get it. I don't get it. What's everyone talking about? I get it now. And the reason I get it now is because I'm typing more quickly, and I'm looking for that response. And you don't get that with a Bluetooth keyboard, whereas a hardwired keyboard into my Mac, and it is lightning speed. Big difference there. And it's the same with the PC. But you're right. It is about the speed. The thing is, at work, you're trying to get through things more quickly, but there are compromises to be made, and the compromise I made was I wanted to find a nicer voice, but something that was a bit more pleasant to listen to. So I agree, if you can get a nicer voice, then go for it.
What speech rate do you have it set to? Because, yeah, anyone who has it above 75%, I think, love Eloquence. I never go above that. I can't get it.
I'm trying to think what mine's is. What's yours, Tim?
I think mine was hovering around there, maybe 70% or so, 70-ish percent.
Oh, wow. That's you know, that's normal usage. You're not an advanced user then, Tim.
Oh, sorry. Well, excuse me.
There's some people that have 100, and even the tweak to get it to 110%.
Oh,
you know, I just can't hear anything when it's like that.
No, I mean, you know, you have to be able to understand. I mean, if you can, amazing. You know, but I'm nowhere near that. I think I'm in the mid-60s, if I'm honest.
Oof, beginner.
And I'm talking about the JAWS speed here. But yeah, mid-60s, I think, for me. Anyway, James has been in touch. He says, hi, Tech Talk. Thank you for your ongoing, very helpful broadcasts. I wonder if you can advise me. I don't need a whole CCTV system. And when we talk about CCTV, we're not talking here about, you know, cameras around your house. Crime watch and all that. But we are talking about a system which, you know, CCTV in blind world, essentially, is a camera that's inside a box that usually is attached to a screen that lets you view documents in a magnified state on the screen. But he says, I would like to have some kind of video magnifier as part of my Windows PC setup for occasional use. It means something that adds minimal extra equipment by displaying the image within Windows on my existing screen. I tried using a webcam, but it wasn't good enough. Do you have any suggestions?
No, off the top of my head. I mean, what I was thinking initially was that, most magnifiers will have some sort of HDMI out, in which case you can attach that to any external screen, such as your monitor of your computer, but it doesn't help if you're using a laptop or something like that. There's no way to get input into that from HDMI. Well, usually, I haven't seen one yet. But most video magnifiers will have some sort of HDMI out, which you can connect to either a big screen TV or your computer monitor. But I'm not sure that's exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly what he's looking for here. And my last experience with the CCTV was, gosh, probably over 12 or 14 years ago. And at that time, I didn't have HDMI, but on the back of the CCTV that I did have, it had several different outputs, and some of those outputs were multiple VGA or SVGA at that point outputs. And so I didn't have to use a special monitor for the CCTV. I could just take it VGA out to my computer, and then I had a control switch where I could just hit that button and it would switch between what the camera would see on the CCTV and then back to my PC's actual, you know, Windows screen again. So if I wanted to use the CCTV's camera, I could do that and switch to it with the, you know, hit of a button. And then if I wanted to go back to Windows, just hit the button again and it would switch it back to my desktop computer. And that was all using the same monitor. Now, how they do that nowadays, again, probably HDMI, probably available within certain CCTVs, but that's buying the actual unit itself minus a monitor and just plugging it into your existing computer monitor. I would presume that's still available nowadays.
Yeah, this was something I had an interest in a while ago because I liked the simplicity of this, that you'd have a little unit beside your computer, you could plug it in, use the monitor, say on your laptop, as a magnifier, and it meant you didn't have to have that separate device. I mean, I've got a Prodigy Duo, not easy for me to say, which is from Humanware, and it's lovely. Got it through Access to Work because, you know, you need to sell your house to buy these things. But it is a lovely piece of kit. I like it. But they are bulky, they're big, they are really useful, but they're just, you know, I get your point, James. You know, you want something simple. Now, there are lots of different versions of this out there. The one that I immediately thought of was from a company called Pamtrad. I've often seen them at Slight Village and all of that, and it's called the PCI, EYE, which is a read and write electronic magnifier for your computer and television. So the idea is you connect the PCI to a computer using a single USB socket. No external supplies, batteries or cables are required. You just click the software icon on the desktop and the computer becomes an electronic magnifier. It can be used with a laptop or a desktop computer and the software supplied on a disk. Now for a TV, all you do is simply plug the PCI into either the SCART socket or the AV input on the television. The SCART adapter supplied make switching between the PCI and the television very easy without using any remote controls. The price of this, including VAT, is £600, ex VAT, £500. I know, it's a lot of money. So looking at other options, and there are other companies, Humanware do some of these on stock on theirs, Optilec is another company. But the one that I saw, because we were talking about this before the show, the one that kind of stood out for me, because it's the cheaper option, and there are two options out of this, from the RNIB shop, the Color Mouse electronic magnifier for Windows. Now, what this is similar kind of idea, and I quite like this because I like the size of it. It is like a computer mouse that you plug in to your monitor, and you just move the mouse over the page, and it will display on the screen in magnified form. So
perfect.
Yeah, it's designed for use with an existing Windows computer or laptop. Simple to use with three viewing modes. Obviously, because it's RNIB, you get the audio instructions as well if you require them, which is also quite useful. Just trying to find out the other. There's obviously various different ways of doing it, different color modes as well. It has. It can also provide pure white text on a black background for maximum contrast and reduced glare. That's useful for anyone with acute sensitivity to light. Hello. And of course, it's especially beneficial for anyone with macular degeneration as well. So not sure about your condition, James, but you know, that's good to know. So quite simple to use, and it works with existing computers. Screen is not supplied, obviously. You have to do that yourself. And it will work with Windows 7, 8, and 10. And it comes with a bag. So it's not all bad, is it?
Free bag.
A free bag. Well, you know, you can argue whether it's free or not. The price is...
Hang on, let me get prepared.
Yeah, you're sitting down. You okay for this?
I'm ready.
It's like QVC. So the price ex-VAT, because that's what we pay as blind people, £306.95.
That doesn't sound bad. No, I'm okay with it.
If even that you're thinking is a bit too much, and, you know, it is a lot of money... then there is another option, which is the Mono Mouse. It's the same thing, but it's called the Mono Mouse, and it's black and white, so it doesn't have any colour, obviously. And that's £246.95.
Even better.
So, yep. You know, options
are
there.
Who needs colour?
So Color Mouse, Mono Mouse from the RNIB shop, if you're looking for that. Those are the best I could find in terms of different options. The Pamtrad one is very good. I've tried it myself. It is quite good. But it's the... But the RNIB ones sound quite good as well. So that could work. Anyway, James, he's also pitched in with some feedback for the show.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, I might regret doing all this research in a minute.
Brace yourself again, Sean.
I think you should have more professional sounding music instead of the Thunderbirds theme, which doesn't seem to have much relevancy. Well.
Go on, Stephen.
Hold me back. Right. let me explain. I think... It's a very interesting question. How did the Thunderbirds theme... This is Tech Talk, by the way. How did the Thunderbirds theme become our theme tune? Some people have suggested Because they've asked this question, and they say, well, hang on, I want to give you the answer. I think I know why. So this is what they think. They think it's because, you know, we are like international rescue for technology people, you know, who are struggling with their technology. We are there to help them at a moment's notice. We can go anywhere in the world, and we can help them through our podcast and radio show. I think the reality is that we're using the Thunderbirds theme because, like Thunderbirds, the whole thing is kind of held up with string and sticky paper.
Are you referring to some sort of amateurism towards this show? Is that what you're saying?
I think it has both elements to it. Let's just put
but
it
it's fun.
It is. It's fun, it and you know fun. It's kind of stuck. And I have to say, I am tempted to stick a poll up on our RNIB Connect Radio Twitter feed to see whether or not we should keep it or lose it. I think we should let the audience decide.
I was going to say, I would be welcome suggestions for a new theme tune.
What should I
be interested to see what people say.
Not the Muppet Show before I get 1,000 emails.
Oh, why not?
Oh, it's so obvious, really, when you think about it, isn't it?
It is.
But yeah, okay, so you can put your thoughts down to techtalk@rnib.org.uk on that one. James also says, the pedant in me is also irked by the inaccurate downloading 99% narrative for a podcast that explains technology. He says, I'm also on the side of less banter, more features. I listen to your show mostly for knowledge, useful for my job than personally. And it really does help, so please keep it up. Well, thanks, James.
I don't know whether to be offended or grateful with that one. It was lovely.
Yeah.
Apart from the banter.
Well, what are you going to do?
Nothing. Okay, thank you, James. Very nice.
Yes, thank you, James.
Kelly's been in touch. Hi, Kelly. In theory, says Kelly, smart homes sound great until the Wi-Fi stops working. That's a good start. therefore, Kelly strongly advises anyone who's visually impaired to learn how to use their devices without the A-Lady or the Google Home Assistant. Label appliances or buy ones that are accessible out of the box, but please do not rely exclusively on smart assistants to control everything. That's a good point, actually, when you think about
it. Yeah, very good advice.
Yeah. The trouble is, it's almost like saying, well, you know, what if the electricity goes out? It's more likely that your Wi-Fi will go down or your internet will go down. And when that happens, it is like being cast back to the Flintstones. It is terrible. But you are right. You have got to be aware of those sort of things. I recently got central heating installed and I was looking for, you know, a smart thermostat so I don't have to get off the settee to change it. But, you know, I want something that will still work. If that Wi-Fi goes down, I still want to be able to control the central heating. So it is something you do need to be aware of, you know, and things like the doorbell. If that goes, can I still use the doorbell if I've got no internet connection? You know, it's these things that, yeah, it is something to be aware of.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what do you do? I got a story. Now, whether or not I should repeat this or not is another story, but I heard
Let me just say no right from the start.
Probably
to cover
not,
myself.
But go ahead anyway.
Yeah. I'll repeat it anyway, because, you know, it wasn't my story, and it was the guy who installed my smart thermostat, which I shall not say which company did it, or indeed which one I've got. But let's just say that it's a favourite of bees. That's all I'm going to say.
Wow. So, how will we ever know?
How could you guess it from that? So, the guy's installing it and he says, you know, the thing is, and actually it was kind of to try, I think, and make us feel better about this, because we had the same concerns. What happens if it doesn't work? Because when you put the hive in, it kind of takes over
the what, sorry?
The bee's favourite thermostat. The hive. When you put the hive in, it kind of takes over the boiler, doesn't it? So all the control is sitting with that box. And I said, well, what happens if this Wi-Fi goes down and we can't control it? And he said, well, actually, there is now a button on the box that acts as a bypass. So you press the button, if it all goes wrong and your Wi-Fi goes down or whatever, you can switch the hive off, essentially, and start controlling the boiler the way you used to. So that's good to know.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you do need to know. I've got the Nest.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. If the Wi-Fi goes down, it just means you can't control it from outside the network or whatever. You've got to use the thermostat, but it's got its own connection directly to the boiler control. It's nothing to do with the Wi-Fi. Totally inaccessible, by the way, if you're not using the app. But
I know,
you know, I've got enough vision. If I can get a magnifying glass, I can see what the temperature is.
Well, the story he told me was that the reason that the button exists is because, and this is kind of shocking to learn, you'd think the button would always have been there, but it wasn't. And the initial Hive that was brought out, they didn't have a button. And it was only when someone was left in a situation where they couldn't turn their heating on after the Wi-Fi had gone, and it was a freezing cold day, and they couldn't get someone to them, that the person was in such a dire straits, an ambulance had to be called, it was a very difficult situation.
Wow.
And it was for that reason that they decided, probably should think about that in future, and let's put a button in to bypass it.
I find it hard to believe that that wasn't considered before they actually brought the thing out anyway.
Really? Well, are you?
Apparently. Believe it, yeah.
So it is in there now. So if you are getting Hive or you're worried about Nest, or any of these things you're concerned about, there are bypasses in them. Thankfully. So let's move on because we've got some more emails to get through, loads of emails actually. This was quite nice this week actually, isn't it? Just talking through the stories.
Very relaxed, very comfortable.
It does feel relaxed, yeah.
Oh, let's get a tea on and a couple of biscuits.
Yeah. What biscuit would you have at this point?
Oh, no, I've done it. I mentioned biscuits. I'm so sorry. Let's move on.
No. What would you go for? What would you go for at this point in time?
I like sports. You know the ones with little stick figures on?
What?
I like to lick them with my tongue and try and figure out what sport they're playing.
I feel sick.
Thank you. You asked.
Please move on. Wow.
I am moving on. Right, email from Simon, who says, Hi, Steve. Goodness me. Hi, Steve and the gang. This is in relation to the fine against Google. Recently, he says, I think that the £3.5 billion fine against Google for bundling software with Android is completely wrong, as I did with Microsoft and Internet Explorer. If companies wish to give their software away, then that's their choice. I am no fan of either Google or Microsoft, but feel that they have been singled out. Apple should be fined under the same rules, as they also ship their own software with iOS, if all is to be even. If you strip Android down to its basics, you're left with a device that can only send and receive calls. Each ecosystem is geared to encouraging you to make the next step into it. By your own admission, and this is to me, you're reluctant to leave Apple because it is what you're used to. No argument there. But you had to be drawn into this ecosystem in the first place. If people were not drawn in, what of social media and the whole telecommunications industry as a whole? I have no doubt that there would be some people who would not make the next step into their ecosystem. What do you think? Well, what do you think, guys?
Absolutely. Yeah, as I said when we did the story, I think that's absolutely right. I think that the issue should be if a company closes off its operating system, once it reaches a certain share of the market, if they stop apps or the competition from working on their OS, then that is different. Then that is, you know, that's a monopoly. But actually shipping your software with your product on, I think, is absolutely fine.
Yeah, I don't see anything wrong with that. Like I said at the time when we talked about this before, if they're going to go after Google for this, just like the email said, they should absolutely go after Apple for this as well. Now, making phone calls on an Apple phone, I mean, it's a phone. It's, you know, the phone is going to be there. But I think it's more the fact that you're forced to use their web browser. You're forced to use, not really totally forced, but semi-forced to use their mail app and things like that. And so if it can be said for Google, it should be said for Apple. But like Sean just said, honestly, it shouldn't even be the case. If it's your device, it's your hardware, and you've got software to put it on there as long as you're allowing the competition to also be available on there. If I can go to an app store and get a different browser or a different mail client or whatever it is, then that should be fine. And as long as I can go and get something from the competition, then I don't see there being a problem. Now, I get the fact that there are a lot of people who don't do that. They start up their phone just like back in the day with a desktop computer and this whole, you know, argument back in the day about Internet Explorer versus Netscape and things like that. You're going to most likely use the default option and not maybe go out and take the time to look for another app or a competitor's app. And maybe that's part of the argument, but still, as long as it's available, I don't see it being a problem.
I think that's...
Exactly. It's like shipping every Android phone with an iPhone as well, because, you know, you got to give people that choice. It's ridiculous.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, I've changed my mind. I like that idea.
But it's ironic because when you think about it, Google is far more open than Apple. I mean, you could do so much more. You can customize. I remember my first Android phone that I got about 5 years ago. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, I love how many options there are. You open a file, you could open it in so many different types of apps. You could move things around a lot easier. It seemed to be far more open. And it's ironic that they get the fine, and Apple, which is completely locked down, you can only use what it gives you, is fine. I don't get that, to be honest. But it's an interesting one. I think it does point... I've said before on the show, I think one of the things that we should do to start the process towards a more open atmosphere between platforms is to allow you, when you buy an app, to have that app available, whether you have an Android phone or an Apple phone or whatever. So whatever phone you have, if you buy the app, you're not buying it on a platform, you're buying the app. So, yeah. You know, if I chose tomorrow to decide to move over to Android, then I could, because all my apps will be there when I sign into my Google account, you know, in this case. So will that ever happen? I highly doubt it. But, you know, it would be great if it did. I want to get a couple more emails in. This one actually stays with Google, actually. This is Rebecca, who follows up on me talking about my new Chromebook that I got, which it was the 11.6-inch Asus, which I've mentioned before was a bit sluggish. Well, Rebecca says, I have an 11-inch Chromebook as well, and I'm experiencing some sluggishness too. I believe this is due to the lower processing speed on these devices. Google and the major screen reader manufacturers should be commended on their work to make Google Apps more accessible, though. I use Google Sheets a lot on the job as a freelancer and find it is more often responsive than Excel. However, the problem comes in when new apps are used in the corporate environment. In 2012, for example, when I first started using Google Calendar, appointments from different colleagues and supervisors were color-coded, and I had no way to access this without special JAWS scripting. I have learned that Google is now addressing the issue, but I think the EU complaint could be applicable to every OS manufacturer, excluding open source projects like Linux. Google isn't to blame, in my view, at least, for corporate decisions concerning how their workflows are structured. Corporations can decide which browsers to use and lock systems down to where they can't be modified. Yes, bloatware can be installed on every Android phone or PC, but that's often mostly done by third parties. Now, yes, I do have a better experience with Google Apps using Google Chrome, but these are free apps. At this point, I think Google Docs and Google Sheets are just as powerful as Office 365. In some cases, they may be better due to the ability to collaborate in real time.
Wow.
A lot in there to unpack. But I think generally what we're talking about here is that, well, first of all, the accessibility side. I think the Google Chromebook is good. The sluggishness is definitely an issue. I tweeted about it and was quite surprised to get a response from Google Accessibility themselves, who pointed me to a website, and it's quite a long site, so I won't read it all out, but if you just Google Accessibility Support, you'll be able to get access to this. And what it does is it will give you a link in there to the disability desk. It's a disability support contact form, which will put you in touch with someone who can help you if you're having problems yourself. But they are very keen on feedback, and they want to know about this, because if there's a way they can fix it, they want to do that. So I'm going to feedback. I'm going to spend some time writing an email. And, you know, it's interesting. I was having a chat with someone the other week who said, don't, you know, this was an app developer, and he said, don't tell me it doesn't work. Tell me how it doesn't work. What are you using? What system are you on? Don't just say, I use your app and it's rubbish. You need to give me more than that, he said. Because, and I think that's the case with all these guys. Tell them what we're doing. Tell them what we're using, because then they might find a solution to it. So, there you go. As for the rest of it, well, that all ties in really with our conversation around Google and this whole thing. Google Docs being better than Office 365, I have to say that's news to me.
I don't know. I mean, who sent that email?
That was Rebecca.
Rebecca, yeah. I mean, she's in the perfect place there to make a judgment on that. She's using it actually for work. Mm. I only ever really dip into Office. I've looked at Google Docs, but when you're using it and you need to get productive on it, I think she's probably the best judge for it. I honestly don't know.
Yeah, I haven't been able to dive into Google Docs as much as maybe I'd like to. I'm much more familiar with Office, but the people that do use it that I've talked to do say that it is accessible and it works really nicely, and especially for collaborative efforts like she was talking about, Rebecca was saying in the email, that you can collaborate with other people much more easily with Google Docs apparently than even with Office. So yeah, I think it's an option. Is it as powerful or more than Office? Again, like Sean, I don't know, but I know it is a viable option.
Okay, quick message from Kevin, who's been in touch. He said, "Hi, I'm a regular listener to the Tech Talk program, and some time ago, Sean mentioned, that he had or was going to make a tutorial." Here we go. Regarding how to install Windows 10 if you have no sight. Could you please point me in the right direction of where I can obtain this tutorial, as I'm a blind user and want to install Windows 10 myself? Many thanks, Kevin. Sean.
Sean, where's that?
I think I handed it in to Stephen.
Oh, yeah, did you?
I'm not sure where it went
there. Did you put it in the tray, did you?
Yeah, my dog ate it. okay, I did totally forget about that. No, that's an interesting one. With the recent updates to Windows, Windows 10, that is, you got Narrator from the installation process, which is really nice. So, yes, I will do that. I may have to make that a two-parter, actually getting the image of Windows and putting it on a pen drive and then the actual installation of it. But, yes, okay, I will put that on my list and I will do it.
It does show the difficulty, though, because you've got so many new versions coming out all the time. I mean, we're about to get a massive update to Narrator in the next edition, the next big edition of Windows. So, you know, you kind of think, is it worth hanging on? Because, you know, there's so many aspects to this. I wonder how good Narrator will be by that time. We shall find out, I guess. Right, listen, quick message from Sue, and I just wanted to put this in finally, who says, "Hi, everyone. Thanks for all the work you do. I would be grateful if you could let me know how to access the feature that Sean did in the past." Something you actually did, Sean.
Oh, that's okay.
This one you did. On sending in messages via audio on the iPhone, including voice memos. Best regards from Sue Cowan. Yes, we certainly will. I think what we'll do, I was thinking about this because this feature seems to have been buried. I was looking at it the other day. It's way down the list now. So I think we'll give it a bit of a boost in the Tech Talk feed. And, you know, you can have a look at it. So what we'll do is we'll put it at the very top of the list so that everyone can find it. And, you know, hopefully you can get something out of it. And, you know, with all the changes in this platform as well, you know, we might want to think about refreshing that. Sean?
Yes, iOS 12, they've they've made voice memos a little bit easier. So, okay, I'll refresh it. No problem.
Listen, that's it for the show. Just before we go, quick word on the podcast, because the Tech Talk podcast has, let's just say, had one or two moments to itself recently. I have been working like a fiend to try and get it fixed. We've had a few issues with it in regards to the numbering of episodes. Apple have brought in this recent thing where the episodes are now numbered, and what rather unhelpfully the software did that runs our podcasts, it decided to number them all, and it did it all wrong. So I'm going through it one by one, making it work. It's not the most accessible process in the world, so, you know, my eyes don't thank you, but it will be done and should be getting there now. Having problems with the podcast, do let me know. That's it for our show. Tim and Sean, I've really enjoyed this today, just sitting and going through the emails. Nice to be with you.
Unusually, so did I. Thank you.
Yeah, it's been very, very nice. Thank you, Stephen.
We'll catch you again next time for another Tech Talk. Goodbye.